You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello and welcome to Just Women, the weekly talk show on Brooklyn's Radio with me, Jackie Mitchell. It's Just Women for the next hour, talking to three fabulous women. On our show today, we have Claire Dyson, a counsellor, Nora Zimmerman, graphic designer and website coach, and Joanna Marshall from Cocoa Chocolates. And if you'd like to join in with any questions or comments, do email studio@brooklynsradio.co.uk. We'd love to hear from you. But now I'd like to welcome our first guest, Joanna Marshall from Cocoa Chocolates. Hello there, Joanna. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Jackie. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, a pleasure. When I came across you at the Ride London Festival selling all those wonderful chocolates, I thought, well, you'd be a marvellous guest for our show.
Oh, that's very kind.
Before we get on to the chocolate, perhaps you'd like to give us a bit about your background. What did you do prior to starting this chocolate company?
Prior to starting the chocolate company, I was a food packaging designer. I worked for a number of years for two major retailers. So I was always very, very closely associated with food and recipes. A lot of the time I was invited to attend the buying sessions where a new food was being developed and we had to develop packaging for it. So I was very much involved in taste and flavour.
So how did this interest in chocolate evolve?
The interest in chocolate, I think every woman loves chocolate.
Absolutely, yes.
So I actually started making a few small truffles. It was a very simple recipe, one Christmas. The following Christmas, I was asked by friends if I was going to do it again because they thoroughly enjoyed them. It then really snowballed from then on. I made more and more chocolate. I took it to our children's school fairs. And it really went with the flow, and I became more and more involved. I wanted to know how to give a shelf life to my truffles, and so I went and did some courses when my children were very small, and then I developed a range of bars, which is what I really spend most of my time making now.
I see. And how did you know how to make the truffles in the first place? Did you just find a recipe cookbook and do it?
A lot of research, recipe cookbooks, but what I really wanted to do was understand shelf life. So that's why I went away to try and understand how to give a shelf life to my product. Using truffles and selling truffles, you had to be very careful of making sure that they were safe to eat.
Sure.
So that's exactly what I learned on my course.
Uh-huh. And then how did you go from like making something as a kind of hobby to actually running a business? There's quite a transition there, isn't there?
Yes, I was invited to go to the Ripley Farmers Market. And what happened was, as I went in February, close to Valentine's Day, not knowing quite how much I would sell, and I sold absolutely everything. Because I sold everything, everybody asked me if I was going to go back the next month. Then I was asked if I'd do another farmer's market. I became more and more involved in going out and actually spreading the good word of tasty chocolate, which is why I became much more industrious with what I had to produce, and then I grew out of the space that I was in our home kitchen.
Yes, so now I presume you have a production unit.
Yes, we have a small unit that we use, which was our second garage, and the council allowed us to convert that and refurbish it into my working kitchen. So it's the space of a garage, and we have two long work surfaces. And it's the most wonderful area to work in. It's very hygienic. It's all up to spec. It's constantly looked at by the council. And we're very industrious in there.
Yes, well, you must be, mustn't you? Because you've got such a range of amazing chocolate and you've won seven Great Taste Awards. And for those of us that don't know what Great Taste Awards, they are given out by the Guild of Fine Food and a very rigorous judging process. And then they're all awarded these Great Taste Awards. So was that a great accolade then when you received those?
It was absolutely fantastic. What happened was, I wanted to be able to understand how good or not my chocolate was. I wanted it to be of a good standard. And I felt that the only way I could truly judge that was by going and entering the Great Taste Awards. The Great Taste Awards, as I know you well know, have normally about 10,000 people that enter every year. Mm. And I felt that if I was ever lucky enough to get an award, that would be a fantastic accomplishment for myself, and I would then be able to show that to my customers and they would be able to understand the quality of my product. What actually also I was aware of was the fact that if you were not lucky enough to win an award, you would at least get the most fantastic feedback from all the judges. And my ultimate aim was to start winning awards so that I could make my chocolate of a very good quality.
Right, and you have such an amazing range of chocolate. I mean, there's this Himalayan pink salt chocolate, there's wattle seed. Now, what is wattle seed?
Wattle seeds are fantastic products, fantastic little seeds to use. Wattle seeds are, there are 120 edible varieties of acacia shrubs and bushes. The wattle seeds are seeds that grow in the long pods. They were originally gathered and eaten by the Aborigines, which is why I had such a massive interest in them, because all of my bars, starting with very fine quality cocoa, I like to incorporate ingredients that we are going to benefit from, that are good for our well-being, so that we can't feel guilty about eating them. Just thorough enjoyment, knowing that we're doing something good for our bodies. The reason why I wanted to use wattle seed was because my awareness is always that there are many people who have gluten allergies. There are many people who have nut allergies. I wanted to use some sort of product within my bar that would give it fantastic texture and crunch, which is exactly what the wattle seed does, but also at the same time, it offers fantastic nutrition for us as well.
That's brilliant. Well, anyway, Joanna's been very kind and brought into the studio with her today some actual chocolate for us to taste. So perhaps you'd like to talk us through the first one, Joanna.
Yes, of course. The first one that we're going to start with is my Himalayan pink salt and toasted almond bar. I'd like to pass you a piece, Jackie.
Thank you very much, Joanna. It looks really, really nice.
And also, yes. If you'd like to try some. Now, the important thing, really, I think, with all of these flavours is to slowly let it melt on your palate. I always tell my customers that good quality cocoa really, really evolves on the palate after it is warmed up by your body temperature. You go through many different tastes of understanding different tastes that hit at different times as the melting process takes place. This particular one has a 2-star Great Taste Award, which we were very excited about. It's a Madagascan cocoa, so it has many floral notes. Using the Himalayan pink salt throughout the bar and the toasted almond, I always like to try and explain that my chocolate is almost like a fine glass of wine. Different notes of taste will hit the palate at different times, mm-hmm. with getting the hint of almond hopefully at the end.
Well, that's very, very nice. What do you think, Dave? Dave's our producer for today.
It's really nice. It's a really nice soft flavour. There's no bitterness at all in there, is there?
There's very little bitterness with the chocolate.
I love the crunchiness of the toasted almonds. Yes. That's really nice.
And the Himalayan pink salt is tremendously beneficial for your nutrition. It has 84 minerals that are proven that exist within it, and they're 84 minerals that we need within our bodies. I'm finding that the following of Himalayan pink salt is unbelievably strong. It's always our top seller.
Yes, okay, moving on then to the next one then,
Moving
Joanna.
On to the next one, we also were very lucky to have an award on this one. We have a 1-star Great Taste Award on this. This is an Ecuadorian chocolate. Now, this one is completely different to the other one you've just tried.
Thank you, Joanna, it looks lovely.
A pleasure. This is a Chinese mint oil with cocoa nibs. So, the Chinese mint oil has a very strong flavour. It's very cleansing. The cocoa nibs have this lovely crunch to them. And again, by using very, very pure ingredients, we know that we're benefiting from the ingredients. The cocoa nibs are full of antioxidants and offer this lovely crunch, so that for somebody who has either a nut allergy or a gluten allergy, they can enjoy this lovely texture and knowing that they will benefit from the ingredients that they're enjoying.
Well, that's absolutely delicious, that lovely rich peppermint flavour and then the crunchiness. What do you think?
Actually smells really nice as well, this one.
Very, very nice.
I think you'll also find with this particular one that it cleanses the palate continuously. The flavour doesn't go. So I'm hoping that it'll be on your palates for some time.
Well, thank you very much for bringing those in. So where can people buy these?
Well, we do 2 farmers markets. We do the Guildford Farmers Market, which is the first Tuesday of every month. I'm in the High Street opposite the House of Fraser. We also do another farmers market, which is the Ripley Farmers Market, and that's on the second Saturday of every month in the playing fields. But we also have quite a number of outlets, retail outlets, with fine quality delicatessens, independent coffee merchants and houses, and independent coffee
shops, like a bit like Jaro Cafe in Isha.
Yes, yes, yeah. And also independent wine merchants. In fact, the nearest place is very close to you. It's at the Vine King in the High Street.
Oh, excellent.
And we also do a lot of work with wine and chocolate pairing. So we are very heavily involved with wine merchants and also vineyards in the south of England. The other places are Bourne Valley Garden Centre, which I know is very close to you.
Okay, and how do you get the ideas for the different varieties? Because they're very unusual.
The first point is I look at which fine quality cocoa I want to use. That has to be my starting point. Automatically, in using that as a good starting point, I have to use very fine quality ingredients. And for me, they tick the boxes for me to start playing around with them if we benefit from them. So if it's something like the Himalayan pink salt, the wattle seed, the cocoa nibs, the essential oils, anything that we can say we did something very good for our well-being, we benefited ourselves by eating some deliciously yummy chocolate. So I then do a lot of research. So I look at the food trends, and I try to be maybe one step ahead. So with the wattle seed, I'm hoping that's one stage ahead. The Himalayan pink salt was one stage ahead. Now a lot of people are using Himalayan pink salt, but not many people are using it with chocolate.
Right. So have you got any new flavours coming up?
Yes, I'm working on an exciting new flavour. This is, again, as crazy a flavour as my Himalayan pink salt. Himalayan pink salt is always my top-selling chocolate. I think people remember you when you do something really extraordinarily different. Sometimes it just needs to be talked about, sometimes just thoroughly enjoyed. So this one that we're doing is including the very attractive little, tiny little red pepper berries. So this flavour should hopefully be available this side of Christmas so that people can taste it at the farmers markets.
Sounds very good. And what about internet sales? Are you on the internet yet for sales?
We're currently developing our website for internet sales.
So you'll have to let us have the details so we can put that on our website for people.
It's going to be very exciting for us.
Because you've got a Facebook page at the moment.
Yes, we've got a Cocoa Chocolate Facebook page, and that's always K-O-K-O-H. I love that page. It's a fantastic way to interact with our customers and a fantastic way with social media to get our mission of fine quality chocolate out there.
Of course. And what are your plans for the future? Are you going to perhaps have a shop?
I don't think I really particularly want to have a shop at the moment. I would like to spend more time getting our chocolate into fantastic delis, fantastic wine merchants, fantastic coffee houses. I want to spend the time not really looking after the shop. I love going out and to the farmers' markets are fantastic, and spreading the cocoa chocolate word. We are trying to then incorporate the idea of web sales abroad as well. So I think at the moment we'll just continue with what we're doing, we'll keep up with what we're doing, and we'll continue talking to our customers to understand what their needs are so that we satisfy the needs that they have.
And what is your top sellers?
Top sellers is always Himalayan pink salt. We do 3 bars with Himalayan pink salt. The first one was a bar that I did which had Himalayan pink salt just simply sprinkled all over the bar. It's the most completely ridiculous idea. It doesn't tick any of the boxes for great taste. However, it's our top seller. It's something which people absolutely love and adore, and it's always the bar that sells out.
Well, isn't that interesting? Yes. Well, would you like to tell us your contact details in case people want to get more information?
Thank you. Anybody who is on Facebook is welcome to go onto our Facebook page, which is K-O-K-O-H Chocolate. If you'd like to send us any messages through that, that's fantastic. Our telephone number is 01483-275196. I have many customers that phone me on a daily basis. Many times it's just to tell me how delighted they are with their purchases, which is very inspiring. We love comments like that. And also, please do visit us at either one of our farmers markets, the Guildford one or the Ripley one. And we would love to talk with you and love you to share some of our samples that we have always available for customers.
Okay, there. Thank you very much for coming in, Joanna. Thank you so much for bringing in the chocolate. That was a great treat.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So that was Joanna Marshall from Cocoa Chocolates, and that completes the first part of our programme. On the second part of our programme, we'll be talking to Nora Zimmerman, graphic designer and website coach.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
The amazing Cheese and Chilli Festival returns to Shalford Park in Guildford on the 22nd and 23rd of July. We're celebrating all things cheese and chilli with lots to entertain the whole family. Stunt shows, live music, falconry display, magic shows, Punch and Judy, the not-to-be-missed chilli eating competition and lots more. There's real ale and cider bars, demonstrations including a wine masterclass and cooking with chillies. There's even a craft market to pick up some unique gifts. Early bird tickets available online at a discounted rate. Check out our website or visit the Guildford Tourist Information Centre. Cheese and Chilli Festival, Shalford Park, Guildford, 22nd and 23rd of July.
Not having a will when you pass away can be an unnecessary financial nightmare for your loved ones, on top of the grief they've already experienced. Let Goddard's accountants help you write your will to give you peace of mind. You may think, I'm only 25, I don't need a will. On the contrary, if you have any assets, for example, a house, savings, a business, or people you would hope to help look after even when you're gone, then you should consider making a will. Goddard's accountants can provide the expert help you require. And, as we've been in business for 40 years, you know you're in good hands. Phone us on 020 8941 2187. Goddard's Accountants, West Molesey. We take away your pain so you get the gain.
If you're passing Walton Community Hospital or near the halfway in Walton, then pop into the hospital coffee shop run by the League of Friends. Enjoy a nice cup of tea for only 60p or a delicious cup of coffee for only 70p. Plus a range of sweets, biscuits, soft drinks, crisps, cards and sundries. We're all volunteers so we can keep the prices low. That's the coffee shop at Walton Community Hospital in Rodney Road, Walton. Open from 10am to 4pm weekdays and from 2pm to 4pm on Saturdays.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello there and welcome back to Just Women with me, Jackie Mitchell. I'm now joined in the studio by Nora Zimmerman, graphic designer and website coach. Hello, Nora, and thanks for joining us.
Hello, hello.
Before we get on to what you do in your business, perhaps you'd like to give us a bit of background as to what you did prior to this.
Well, I have always wanted to be a graphic designer, and when I decided to go to university, there was no degree where I was in Buenos Aires in Argentina. So I ended up studying architecture for a couple of years and then advertising for a third year until finally they opened a degree in the University of Buenos Aires and I joined. So, yeah, I had to do a little bit of a detour before getting to what I really wanted. But I was very clear that that's what I love doing.
Right. And how? And then so when did you come to the UK? How many years did you study and then when did you come to the UK?
Well, I finished my degree. I worked there for a couple of years and then I fell in love with an Englishman.
Ah.
And came here, didn't speak very much English, and I decided to join a master's degree here at Chelsea College of Art and Design. It was a little bit to really learn English in an environment that I could learn as well other things rather than just learn English in an adult education class, for example.
So it was in art and design, this course?
Yeah, it was more to do with public art and design for public places. So, it was part-time, but I had access to the library and to the computer room. And I was exchanging with other people that they were interested in the same things that I was.
Right. And was it very challenging because you said you spoke no English, or were you taking English language classes?
Yeah, they were very supportive friends. The tutors were very good as well. I think the most difficult part, I suppose, was the thesis. But then straight after, I was offered to work to do a commission for Westminster and Chelsea Hospital, which I did. And then I realised I actually still wanted to do graphic design, so I went back to my first love and started working at Procter & Gamble in the in-house design studio here in Weybridge.
Oh, right. And then when did you sort of diversify into websites?
I started doing websites probably about 6 years ago. As I left Procter & Gamble and started working more from home, there was a need, basically. People were all asking. I was working on... I was working in print, you know, doing brochures and corporate identity and anything that goes on print. And I, at Procter & Gamble, I was doing a lot of point-of-sale material and guidelines of use for big brands. And as time evolved, you know, people needed websites. So it was a good way of actually learning something new for myself and... I suppose it's like expanding, because what happens on print is not very much the same as what happens on a website. It's very different, the communication.
Mm-hmm.
The communication on a website is very immediate, very swift, and it has to be crystal clear. Whereas when we communicate in print, it can be a little bit slower, the pace. It can be more wordy, and it doesn't have to be so fast. But because everybody goes on websites and they can just literally click off in a second.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
It's a different challenge and it's a different way of communicating. And I just love that.
Yeah, so when did you leave corporate life and set up on your own? And what made you do so?
I left corporate life, I think, about 10 years ago, or perhaps a little bit less. It was mostly due to... childcare. My son had been diagnosed with Asperger's, and he wasn't statemented. Basically, he wasn't bad enough to have support from the school. So I just wanted to be there for him, and I was increasingly doing a lot of telephone calls and negotiations with the school, you name it, what a mother would do for
sure.
a child, you know, mm-hmm. to have the right support. And I just realized that actually I wanted to be around for him and also for my daughter. And the best way was to just work from home where I could manage my time and, yeah, be around for him. And I'm actually quite pleased because he's doing incredibly well.
Oh, that's good to hear. So yeah. For 10 years, then, you've worked on your own?
Yes. Well, not on my own. I collaborate a lot with loads of people.
Of course, so, yes. And was it a difficult transition from corporate life to being on your
yes.
own?
Yes, I was very lonely at the beginning. I think I missed the interaction, I missed the pace. You know, everything's very fast in corporate life. So it took me quite a while to adjust to the rhythm.
Sure.
I think at the beginning I was very pleased I was going to be able to go to coffee mornings, but that was not really the case. I think I was still missing, you know, the work.
Yes.
I do love my work.
So did it take a while to get started? On your own?
I had a few clients. I think I've been very lucky. There was a lot of word of mouth. I had one really good client, which I still work for them, which the work was ongoing. So probably not.
Oh, well, that's excellent. That's very good to hear. So anyway, what's very exciting is that you've started running this website school program,
yes.
which is an online course helping business owners to create easy-to-maintain websites. So when did yes. you start that up?
Well, I haven't started yet.
Oh, I see. It's a brand new venture.
Yes.
Excellent. Would you like to tell us about it?
Yes. Well, the website school came about after... doing lots of websites for business owners, mostly women, that they really need to be free with their entity, with their business, to manage it, and also to feel that they're proud of their online presence. And the main thing that I discovered is that people want to really update their website, they want to maintain it, they want to change it. I mean, as women, we love nurturing, we love... you know, watering the seeds, as I'd say. So, I realized that the best thing to do was not just come up with, you know, these wonderful designs and then they have to, you know, come back to me every time that they need some help or a change or how can I do this? Whereas, you know, if I set this up, you know, and then you have all the power, really, to manage your website, to develop your brand, to, you know, add the subpage, to move the photos around. Because also as women, we flow a lot. we change. You know, 1 week we're offering this service, and then perhaps, you know, in 3 months' time, oh, I've got this new service. You know, we're full of ideas. We're full of, you know, we birth things, really.
Of course, yes, yes.
So,
so this is what this is designed to do, is it? So this would this be your existing clients that would go on this, or can anyone go on it?
Anyone can come on it, yes. It's going to be an online program. It runs for 7 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and we work together in a small group. It's about 3-4 people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, for example, have a website that is not working very well, or you're unhappy with it, or perhaps, you know, a relative created for you, but you've grown out of it, it's just not representing you anymore, this is probably the kind of program that would work. So it's... and. It's for people that really want to be in control of their website. So the first week we probably work on, you know, knowing what's at the heart of the business. Then we move on to, you know, how are we going to communicate all these?
Mm-hmm.
Then we work on the website, and then I do a tutorial to show everybody how to literally control their websites.
And presumably they all have to have content management systems to be able to do this.
No, we just work on platforms that are self-hosted. They don't need to have anything. They just need to have a computer. They just need to have a lot of willingness. They need to invest a little bit of time in thinking as well.
Sure.
It's a bit of a process.
Yes.
And it requires focus, I
sure.
would say.
And would they have a different module every week? Is that how it will work?
Yes, yes. I mean, the process is quite structured, and I am definitely in charge, and I am organizing it all. But also, it's quite movable. You know, things open up, so we look at different things
sure.
as it happens.
And it's purely on the internet, then? That you don't have any face-to-face contact with people?
That's a really good question. I do love face-to-face, actually. And a lot of the clients, I do tend to meet them in person, if possible. But if someone lives in Canada,
sure.
I will work with them in Canada online.
Of course.
So if everybody is local, yes, I'm very happy to meet them. We can all meet at the same time. Mostly people come to my house. So, yeah, it just depends. Ideally, in person at least once. If not, everybody jumps online, basically.
Okay, and what do you think makes a good website?
Oh, what a good question. a good website, I would say... Actually, I'm going to use an analogy. And this is to do with architecture, really. So when people come to your online home, which is your website... I always say to clients that it's a really good idea to almost position yourself in the hallway of your house. So when people come, what you open the door and you say, "Hi, lovely to see you. I haven't seen you in ages. Oh, I like that dress you're wearing." So it's almost like you open the door and you greet each other and you put them at ease by saying, "You can put your coat here, and here's the sitting room, if there's a party, for example. And here's where having drinks." So
sure.
It's almost a way of welcoming people and pointing at what's possible, but also creating a connection, you know, creating the thing that really makes them feel at ease, which is almost invisible. But as soon as people feel that, yes, that's me, I am, you know, I am at ease in this place, then they can be guided through the website. And that's mainly what we do at Website School, or part of the work that
yes.
we do. It's part of this strategy online to get people to go through the website and to get their needs met, really.
Yes, and of course, images are very important, aren't they?
Yes, yes.
You've got to have some eye-catching images to get people in. Yeah.
Yes, yes. With images, I would say it's important to think what you want the image to say. You know, is this image communicating ease, or is this image communicating speed, or whatever we are, you know, wanting people to feel, and whatever we're wanting to communicate, then I would also work with the images the same way.
Mm-hmm. And how often do you think people should update their websites?
Oh, that's a question as well. To be honest, if you can, every week will be great. Even just little tweaks. Oh, this word perhaps is not quite saying what I used to say, doesn't happen anymore. Or perhaps this image is a little bit out of date, so let's change this photo. It's not big overhauls, but mostly, you know, small changes is ideal. Also because the pages get indexed again, which means, you know, the website feels fresher and also it gets indexed. So both.
What do you mean by it gets indexed?
It gets indexed by Google. So on the Google searches, you know, it changes, you know, when you change certain words and when you do a little bit of SEO, which is search engine optimization.
Okay. And do you have any other tips for our listeners about the websites?
Well, if you have any questions, you can always contact me. Pick my brain. I offer a 20-minute consultation for free, so we can do that if you have any questions. Mostly for a good website to work, it has to be a good representation of what you offer, really.
Sure, and be easy to follow, easy to look around, isn't it?
Yes, clarity is essential. It's like going to a house that is very complicated and has lots of extensions and you lose your way.
Mm-hmm.
So if you lose your way and you cannot go back to where you were, it's probably not working.
Sure, okay. And something else I wanted to ask you about was the Women's Temple, because I believe you're involved with that. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. Women's Temple. So Women's Temple is a women's circle. I occasionally hold the circle. I've trained to be a facilitator, and Women's Temple is like when you've been at work for a very long day and you come back and you're going to have a nice bath, it smells of roses, and you can just literally drop and relax and be yourself, and you don't have to do anything, you don't have to say anything, you can just be yourself.
So it's a group of women who meet up, is it? And you give each other support?
We don't give each other support, we just be together, yes.
Right, and how long has it been going?
Well, women's circles are ancient, really. We just actually forgot that they existed, but there's a very, very big, you know, movement for the feminine to actually, you know, come through and wake up, and, you know, for women to feel that they can just be themselves, just who they are, you know, nothing to achieve, no one to be in particular, and actually take your seat in the circle just as you are and who you are, with children, without children, old, young, you know, owning up and being truthful to exactly where you're at.
And how often do they meet?
Well, the temples vary. I mean, the one I run, at the moment we are going to meet probably once a month, once every 2 months. It's a little organic.
It sounds very intriguing.
Yes. Well, if anyone's interested, they can just go to the website, which is womenstemple.co.uk. And also, if they want to learn more about it, they can go to my teacher's website, which is called awakeningwomen.com.
Okay, that's brilliant. Well, getting back now to websites.
Yes.
So what's the most unusual website you've ever designed?
Unusual.
Or perhaps most challenging. Perhaps an e-commerce one is particularly challenging, I would imagine.
The membership websites can be a little challenging because it's like having two websites in one, really. So, I would say those ones. So we've got the front end, which is what the public sees. And then when the members are logged in, the whole thing happens again in a different way. So we have to guide the members, especially the ones where the members can do lots of things. And there's features where the members can upload the information, they can do their profiles, they can upload events. Those websites tend to be a little bit more like heavy in the thinking before we can do anything.
Yeah. And which website have you enjoyed designing the most?
I have to say, I don't like designing my website.
Oh, is that because it's Coles Newcastle, because it's your own?
Yes, Yes, I think as soon as I finish it, I just go, oh my gosh, I don't like it, I want another one.
Oh, right.
Can someone else please help me?
And how do you manage to juggle your time? Because obviously you've got, you know, you've got two children, you're running these businesses, and how do you manage to manage, you know, juggle everything?
I don't juggle, I just do it, and I just enjoy it, and I stop a lot, I sleep a lot.
You must be very good at time management.
I am. Yes, I'm probably very good at time management, yes.
Do you have any tips for us on time management?
Don't rush. Take your time.
Right, okay. Well, thank you very much, Nora, for coming in and seeing us. That's great.
Would you
like to give us your website details so people can get more information?
Yes, my website is norazimmerman.com, and Zimmerman is with one M.
Okay, thank you very much, Nora.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. That was Nora Zimmerman, graphic designer and website coach. And that concludes the second part of our programme. On the third part of our programme, we'll be talking to Claire Dyson, a counsellor.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
I'm so glad you're open.
Thank goodness you're here.
Do you ever close?
Did you know the pharmacy at 20 Church Street, Weybridge, is open 100 hours every week to meet your immediate medical needs? We're here for you from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. weekdays, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturdays, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sundays. Our friendly and knowledgeable team can provide you with the advice you need, as well as helping you with repeat prescriptions, all the over-the-counter products you would expect, and if you can't get in to visit us, we will deliver to you. The Pharmacy, 20 Church Street, Weybridge. We're here when you need us, 100 hours every week.
Do you need help with your Apple Mac but you don't know where to go? Rafael is your local Apple Certified Support Professional. He can help you with any of your Apple needs, such as setting up iCloud accounts and family sharing. Or perhaps you'd simply like to learn a few new things about your Apple Mac. Simply visit www.rafalkukla.com or call 07907 795000 today to arrange an on-site visit in the comfort of your home or office. That's 07907 795000 for peace of mind Apple support.
When you're looking to send important documents and packages, don't settle for second best. Choose Mailboxes etc. in Church Street, Weybridge. We offer you high street access to fast, reliable and internet trackable delivery services from world-class couriers, including UPS, FedEx, Parcelforce and DHL. We also offer a range of Royal Mail services and can pack your shipment so that it arrives safely. Around the corner, around the country or around the world, big or small, Mailboxes etc. in Weybridge can collect, pack and ship it all.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello there and welcome back to Just Women with me, Jackie Mitchell. I'm now joined in the studio by Claire Dyson, a counsellor. Hello there, Claire.
Hello there, Jackie.
Thanks for joining us on the show.
Oh, well, thank you so much for asking me. It's lovely to be here.
That's great. So how long have you been working on your own as a counsellor?
Not for very long. I started out working in GP surgeries and with a local charity and also a group of counsellors called The Practice locally. So it's taken me a little while to sort of wind up to setting up my own practice and working myself.
Okay, and what's your background? Did you always set out to be a counsellor, or have you sort of drifted into it?
It was one of those sort of series of events that that took place, and here we are now talking about it. I'd been working selling serviced offices in the city for about 12 years. And then there was a run on Northern Rock and Lehman's crashed, and it all became rather difficult. And I had a stress episode. I went to my GP because I was bursting into tears at work for no reason. And I was expecting I'd be given some pills or something. And instead he prescribed me a counsellor. So I was hugely sceptical. I thought, what on earth? You know, I'm sitting in a room with a complete stranger. How is this going to help? And it was a complete revelation. It was just wonderful. It was like you put the world on pause and you're there and you've got some breathing space, no one's trying to reach you, you don't have to do anything, no one's making demands, and you can just think through what's going on for you and make some sense of it. And after that experience, I thought, well, I know I'm not going to do sales forever. I'm not going to want to do it forever. And people need this. People need to know that this is available.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the beginning of it. And then also, a little bit like Joe with, you know, wanting to make sure about shelf life and things like this, I thought, well, I don't want to just launch into it. I need to make sure I'm trained and I know what I'm doing. And that took 5 years.
What sort of courses did you go on?
Well, I did a sort of foundation course just to get my head in the right place, and then an intermediate, and then I did a degree. So 3 years of it's just fascinating, all the different approaches, you know, all these buzzwords you hear like CBT and psychodynamic and behavioral. Well, they're all different approaches to counselling. Well, they're all trying to achieve the same thing, which is help people make sense of what's going on and decide what to do.
And so did the counselling help you get through to the other side?
Hugely.
Yes.
Absolutely hugely.
Yes.
And just then that breathing space.
Yes, and then you decided, you did enough research, you thought, right, this is for me.
Yes, because I knew I wasn't going to stay. I've been doing the sales job for 12 years and it was such high pressure. And the counselling showed me that it was just too much and I needed to make a change. And my work-life balance was completely all over the place. I wasn't doing any of the things that made me happy anymore. And I thought to myself, well, what could I do where the older I get, the more people think I know what I'm talking about? So that was where the idea came from. And the fact that, as I said, that where I feel the passion is that it's so helpful just being able to talk to someone who's not going to give you advice and not going to tell you what to do, because I'd really had enough of that. You know, that was what everyone was doing, all these voices saying, oh, do this, do that, try this, try that. But just someone who gently noticed and wondered and helped me see how I thought and how I approached things and where that was working quite well,
mm-hmm.
and where that was causing me these difficulties.
Sure.
And then with that awareness, I was able to do something about it, and I actually knew what to do. The answers were in there. It was just so much noise from the busyness of life, I couldn't see it.
Sure. So you set up on your own, and then how did you manage to get any clients? Because you must have been sat there with a blank piece of paper.
It's really through word of mouth and through going out and meeting people. Because I think if people can meet me and talk to me and have an idea of what I'm like, they feel like they know me. And then they can make that judgment, could I trust this person? Is this person going to be supported? I think that's the most important thing I found, is there was no judgment. What I offer is what's called non-judgmental warmth, and I'm empathetic. And I don't think like go, oh my goodness, that's so terrible, how could you have done that?
Yes,
you
know? Of course.
So I think if by meeting people and them getting to know me a little bit, then they can judge whether they'd feel comfortable either coming and having some working with me themselves, or telling someone else who they, you know, is dealing with something that's happened about me.
Now, it's very interesting because you're actually specialising, aren't you, in understanding your eating program?
Yes, that's right.
Because I understand you had a problem with yo-yo dieting.
Yes.
For those of us who don't know, can you tell us what yo-yo eating is? Dieting, rather. Is?
Well, my experience of it was, growing up, it had been a requirement of me that I was always slim. It was an important quality in our family. And when I went off to boarding school when I was 16, I put on a lot of weight very rapidly. And when I came home, I could see that my parents were quite shocked, and suddenly I felt that I was an unacceptable person. So I was put on a quite strict diet to lose all of the weight. But then because I was quite unhappy and food was how I comforted myself, there was these two sort of forces. There was a desire to be slim so that my family would find me acceptable again, but then this need to comfort myself, which was how I used food. So really, from the age of 16 until relatively recently, I go through the cycle of having a miserable time in life and putting on lots of weight, And then thinking, oh, you're a horrible, unacceptable person, and going on a very strict diet to lose it all, which would be unsustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So then I put it all back on again and hate myself for having put it all back on again.
Just like a yo-yo, in
exactly.
other words. Yes.
Exactly.
You weren't bulimic or anything like that?
No.
No.
No. Arguably, I would do a lot of exercise. If I felt I'd eaten too much, then I would go and hit the gym and burn off those calories that way. So that was a sort of purging mechanism, but not bulimic as such.
But the understanding your eating program, that helped you end 35 years of yo-yo dieting.
Yes, because what had always amazed me is I go through phases where my eating was really calm and it was easy to eat healthily and no trouble at all. And then it would just go berserk and I'd have these urges to eat, often particular foods.
And was that triggered by something, some emotional upset?
This was it. This was exactly right. I could not work out what was driving it. And then when I went through this program, which is just 5 weekly sessions, really unpicking that part of it is keeping a diary, not so much of what you've eaten, but of when you got the urge to eat, what happened immediately before, what were you feeling, what were you thinking. And then suddenly it becomes clear, yes, this is how I'm dealing with my emotions. I'm not talking about it to anyone or showing people I'm unhappy. I'm eating scones. And once, I think with so many things that I'm catching, once that light bulb goes on, whether it's eating or whether someone's depressed, once that light bulb goes on and they've got insight into why they're doing what they're doing, it's 90% of the work, then it becomes very straightforward to make a different choice when that trigger comes, to do something different.
So can you tell me a bit more about the Understanding Your Eating program? So you say it's 5 sessions.
Yes. So the first one is really to learn the emotional language, it's called. So understanding what emotional eating is and then being able to make a judgment whether that is something that you're doing. The next stage is then to do this diary and really get to grips with what's triggering and do some work on why that is. Then we look at self-esteem and body esteem, because that is usually in there somewhere. There are messages that we've had from childhood that are affecting that. And then it's working through finding different ways of dealing with your emotions than eating.
Mm-hmm. And what would those be?
Well, in my case, if I'm feeling anxious, that will make me eat. And I know that if I go and do some organising, so if I go and rearrange my desk or rearrange my bookcase or something like that, that will relieve my anxiety.
Really? Something simple
yes.
like that?
Something really simple.
Rather than eating a few scones?
Exactly. Because you get into that horrible cycle where you eat it and you feel lovely because, you know, they're delicious and it gives you all those wonderful feelings. And then afterwards you think, oh, I've just done that. I've eaten something that's full of all those calories, and off I'm likely to go again on my yo-yo dieting. So now I do different things. I like, for example, I'll go and look around card shops. I love reading different cards and building up stocks of cards. I have my allotment where I'll go and work on that. And that's wonderful. When I'm feeling really blocked, like I'm not getting anywhere, which can be quite stressful and prompt the urge to eat, then I go up to my allotment and I'll weed a patch and I can see I've done something. You know, I'm in control of it and I've done something, and that's very calming. So it's really helping people. And to be honest, this applies to so many things, not just eating, but depression, stress. It's finding other ways of managing things.
But do you think it's a big problem, this compulsive and addictive eating? Do you think this is a growing problem, especially amongst teenage girls?
It's really difficult to know. My experience, because I went to a support group, was I was amazed at how widespread it was, how many women there were sitting there, and one or two men, because I thought it was just me. I thought I was sort of by myself, and I was the only one doing this, what I perceived to be a terrible thing. And so to find that there were others, that was hugely, what a relief that was, that it wasn't just me and I wasn't mad, you know, with this great urge. So in answer to your question, I suspect it's more widespread than we think, that there are quite a lot of people out there who are managing their emotional life in this way.
And so what would your advice be to them?
I think when the urge to do whatever it is you do to cope, whether it's eating or something else, if you can pause and just notice what's going on, what am I feeling right now? What am I thinking right now? And has any big change happened in my body? Have I suddenly gone bright red or something like this? And get to what the underlying thing is that's prompted, that's caused an emotional upset, that's prompted you to want to go and eat something. To me, it's a little bit like a knot. You know, this is a big knot. And if you can sort of loosen it a little bit here and a little bit there and get more of an insight into what is driving that behaviour, mm-hmm. because it's very difficult to stop the behaviour without working out what is actually driving it. It's like putting out a spot fire without actually dealing with the big inferno.
Yes, yes. And what other areas do you work in? I notice phobias is one of your areas.
And if I look at the sort of things I work with recently, are loss, so people who've had someone die or are dealing with dementia, a marriage breakup, miscarriage.
What are the most unusual phobias you've had to deal with? Because they can be quite crippling, can't
yes.
they? For example, the fear of heights.
The reason I'm pausing is it's difficult because, of course, all my work with clients is completely confidential.
Oh, I know, yes.
That's the power of it. I think the one that perhaps people can relate to is the fear of public speaking.
Oh, yes, that's a common one,
so,
isn't it?
So standing up, you've got to go and stand up in front of... usually small numbers of people are okay, people that you know. But it's the standing up in front of 100 people and the sheer panic that people get into over that. And we often find, as we track back the client and I, that something's happened in childhood where they were made an example of. They were, you know, stood up in front of a group of people and felt ashamed. And that's what they're worried is going to happen, that everyone's going to laugh at them. There's usually something in their past experience which is underlying this. And once we get to that, which is maybe it's the fear of looking like an idiot, then we can tackle that. So what would happen if you stood up there and all your notes fell on the floor? And then once people think, well, I'd bend down and pick them up. And then suddenly it doesn't seem so scary.
Sure.
So it's understanding what's driving. It's like so much of this, Jackie. It's understanding what's driving it. And then it's not the thing, it's not the phobia, it's the feelings about the thing, it's what's driving it.
Yes, yes, but there seem to be so many phobias, especially of flying. That's another one that seems to be very common.
Yes, that terrible fear that you're getting on the one plane that's going to come crashing and burning. And there's a very specific method that will deal with that.
Right, okay. Well, thank you very much for coming in to see us. So would you like to give us your contact details in case people want to get more information about you?
Yes, it's probably worth visiting the website. My business is called Untangle Your Life, and the website is www.untangleyourlife.co.uk. And there are more contact details there, my email and my phone number.
Okay, that's great. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Claire.
Thank you.
So that was Claire Dyson, a counsellor. So I'd like to thank all our guests today on Just Women: Joanna Marshall from Cocoa Chocolates, Nora Zimmerman, graphic designer and website coach, and Claire Dyson, counsellor. And thanks to my producer, Dave Jemitis. We are always keen to hear about local women with interesting lives, so if you know of anyone you think should be on our show, please email justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with their contact details and we'll get in touch with them. Details of past and future guests are on our website, brooklandsradio.co.uk/justwomen, and you can find us on Facebook too, at @justwomenbr, or on Twitter, @brooklandsradio. This show will be repeated on Thursday at 8 p.m. Thank you for listening and join us again next week for Just Women, 1 p.m. on Tuesday. So it's goodbye from me, Jackie Mitchell.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, why not keep up to date with the Sound of Surrey by listening live at brooklandsradio.co.uk or through our free mobile app.